Hey, folks.
Whoa.
That seemed a little loud, but it's okay, because we're allowed to be loud here at What's for Dinner. Welcome to What's for Dinner. This is episode, my God, I think this is episode 16. Oh, my God. The big one. Thank you. This is my, legally, my podcast is allowed to drive now. It's 16. First of all, want to thank all of you for listening, for sticking with me as I still as I figured out the technical end of this, which I think I pretty much have. Might get a couple more hiccups, but I think we are past the worst of it, and we are now like it's like on a plane when you're taking off during stormy weather. A lot of turbulence, a lot of thrown around. You go, oh my God, this is making me nauseous. I don't know if I could last. I wish I never took this flight. And then you get past the storm, and then you're like in smooth flying. So I think we've passed the takeoff turbulence, and we are in some smooth flying. So thank you very much. Whether you've downloaded this on iTunes, you're listening on Stitcher, or you got this off the website, whatsfordinnerpodcast.com, however you got here, I'm glad you're here. I am your host, Flip Schultz, broadcasting from the living room / studio, and with me, this is kind of cool because pretty much every episode, I've had one of my comedy friends, one of my comedian friends, who I've known for years. We've done shows together, we've had stories, and we reminisce and we bullshit, and that's a car out the window. This week, I have with me sitting on the couch my neighbor, who is also a very talented filmmaker, who I've really only known for a few months. So this is going to be interesting for me, too, because I'm probably going to get to know a lot more about him as you get to know about him. But please welcome, with the applause, wherever you are, I hope you are clapping your hands right now, even if you're driving in your car, just put your knee on the wheel and just clap your hands a couple times for my filmmaker, neighbor, and friend, Derek Sims is here, everybody.
Hey, Flip.
Hey, Derek.
Hey. January. I've known you since January. That's when I moved here.
Okay, so so 7 months.
Wow.
Yeah. Man, time flies fast,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Really it does.
I remember you moved in, and our apartment, we have a first and second kind of unit apartment, and I remember you were pulling in, and Allison and I were like, oh my God, we hope our new neighbors are cool, because our old neighbors, nice enough people, not very friendly with them pretty much at all. So we're thinking, oh, I hope they're cool, I hope they're young. And you and your lovely wife pull up in this pickup truck, and you were young, and you were virile, and and I'm like, oh, thank God, and helped you move a chair off the back of a pickup. Like, we're going to be good neighbors right from the start.
We were. And you guys made us cookies from the beginning.
That's Allison. Allison is a homemaker. You know what this is called? What's for dinner? Because Allison is always making some kind of dinner.
And I wooed them initially with banana bread and homemade cookies.
Oh, and those cookies, I mean, they still have a permanent mark in my memory.
I need to make them.
Did they touch you? Is that why? They touch you in the good way, though.
Did they touch your cookies?
Did you get molested by cookies? Is
they
what we're asking.
Touched my banana bread.
Oh.
By the way, honey.
Was it nutty?
Honey, hold it from the bottom. You got to hold it. Yeah.
Like
you got to hold it.
Other things. Oh, we've already started off on a good foot.
No, it's okay. Allison's got the shitty mic tonight. So she's got to hold it from the bottom if you're going to hold it. I know. Good. She's sitting down. So Allison's going to be joining us. So Derek Sims. Derek Sims, everybody. So Derek, first of all, you are a filmmaker, is that right?
Yes.
You moved here from Arkansas.
Oh, man. I think I've told you this, that it just eats me up whenever someone says Arkansas. And I've heard it, actually, in the last month, I've heard it quite a lot.
Were they being serious? Because I was being ironic.
Oh, no, yeah, I know. But these people were being serious, and I had to inform them.
They actually pronounce it Arkansas?
Arkansas, yes.
Wow.
I would say, they'd say, where are you from? And I would say, Arkansas. They mean, Arkansas, as if I didn't know where I live, where I grew up for, 20 years.
I'm from Florida. You mean
years.
Flo-Rida?
Yeah.
Like the rapper? It's called Flo-Rida.
I have to tell them that no, it's Arkansas, and that's actually an Indian word meaning downstream people.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's a Caddo Indian. I think
that's funny because I've been to Arkansas, and there are a lot of downstream people there.
Yeah, that's true. We're all
What's interesting is, and again, I don't know a lot about you, but
but you do know more than, say, the regular neighbor.
Do I?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we kind of hang out a lot.
Hang out a lot. We have become quick friends.
And also, like, you know, Peppers kind of brings us all together.
Peppers does bring it. Peppers is their adorable dog.
Yeah.
so you're a filmmaker from Arkansas. God, now I'm saying it. Sorry, Arkansas. One strike for me. A filmmaker from Arkansas. I don't know. Are there a lot of, like, famous or well-known filmmakers from Arkansas?
No. No, there are hardly any.
Is there anybody of notoriety?
Well, Billy Bob Thornton is one of the biggest.
That's pretty big.
Yeah.
He
was from the Hot Springs, Malvern area, which is about 30 minutes from where I went to college and about an hour from where I grew up.
Okay.
And
where you grew up, that was pretty rural.
Yeah. My town had less than 400 people.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine that.
So
Billy Bob.
Billy Bob, and more recently, Jeff Nichols. If you haven't heard of him yet, you will, because he was just nominated for Best Director at Cannes this year, just a few weeks ago. Yeah.
What film did he do?
Mud, with Matthew McConaughey and Reese Witherspoon. But previously to that...
Is that a sequel to Sweet Home Alabama, or whatever shitty movie they did together?
No. It's nothing like that at all. I mean, this guy is kind of one of the new, you know, art house filmmakers.
Really?
You know, another Terrence Malick, you know, kind of Lars von Trier kind of guy. His films aren't as good looking as, say, Terrence Malick films, but, I mean, they're heavy. You know, they're really good. His previous one before this was called Take Shelter. And Michael Shannon is a frequent collaborator with him. Do you know him, Michael Shannon, the actor? If you saw him, you know.
If I saw him, I probably know him.
He was nominated for Best Actor for Revolutionary Road. Did you see that movie?
No, I didn't.
Oh, well, it's really depressing. But
that was Leonardo DiCaprio, Kate Winslet, right?
Yeah. But anyway, Jeff Nichols is going to be the new guy.
The new it guy.
Yeah, but I mean, he Take Shelter was in, I think it was in Cannes last year.
That's not the one about the Joan Jett.
No,
was that
no,
Gimme
no.
Shelter?
I don't know.
Or is Gimme Shelter, is that a Stone song?
I think that's the name of a movie, though. I think I've seen
it. It was a movie.
Recently. Yeah.
You're right, it was
Runaways.
Runaways.
Yeah,
thank
you,
honey.
Yeah, that was a bad movie.
Was it?
Hold on, I think Michael Shannon may be in that movie. I can't remember.
Wow,
though.
This is like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
6 degrees of Michael Shannon.
Very, very few ways to win that game.
But he's a great actor, and they started off together. I think Jeff Nichols' first feature film was called Shotgun Stories, and it went to Sundance, did really well. Roger Ebert called it one of the best films of the year.
Really?
In that year, I think it was 2006.
He didn't actually say it; he just typed it, probably.
Oh, this was back whenever he was.
Oh, he did have a voice.
Yeah. He's a big fan of Jeff Nichols' work, and I am too. Man, he's good.
First of all, since there aren't a lot of filmmakers coming out of Arkansas, what kind of influenced you or inspired you to be a filmmaker without that kind of, I guess, influence around you?
I really don't know. I think it was partially out of boredom. I mean, I was
in
always,
Arkansas? Really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and the thing is, like, growing up, I literally lived 2 miles from anyone else. Like, there was not literally a house for 2 miles, and then that house was my grandparents' house. And then you had to go even further down the road. And I lived, you know, about 5 miles from a paved road. You know, we were on the river road. We were the only house on the river road. So if you were, like, you had to know where you were going to get to my place.
I can't. See, that idea is so foreign to me. I mean, because I grew up in Florida, in South Florida, like in the Fort Lauderdale area. I mean, I had, like, literally right next to me was a house. I mean, I lived in a fucking neighborhood, mm-hmm. you know, and there were McDonald's, and I was in a city. And I the idea of that is so, would you rather, knowing, like, living out here in L.A. for a couple of years, compared to growing up as you did, what do you prefer now?
Oh, well, I would much rather be in Arkansas in that setting. Here's the deal. I think partially it was out of boredom, but I was always, unlike a lot of my other family members, I was always the creative one. And like you, from an early age, I would sit down with, you know, like a rubber band and a piece of wood, and I would play with it for 2 hours, you know. Like I would find something to do. And I actually heard something on NPR this morning. They were talking about how kids now, their parents sort of micromanage them so much. Like in summer programs, their summers are planned out, or the kids are sitting at home watching TV or playing video mm-hmm. games all summer long, like when they get out of school. Well, and the host there was talking about how when he was a kid, he grew up in Inglewood, and his parents just let him go. Like, they worked during the day, and they just let him go around to friends' houses and stuff like that. They'd walk around town, you know, kind of make their own sort of fun. And that's how my childhood was. I mean, I had a regular Nintendo, you know, and I played it every once in a while, but that's not... We stayed outside and played in the woods and climbed trees and...
Well, I think that's kind of like a commentary on the way most children grew up. Because even though I grew up in a city, you know, and I had, you know, I had malls and movie theaters, mm-hmm. whatever, most of the time I'd be out with my friend who lived a couple houses down, and we'd imagine, we'd play, we'd be in the yard, we'd play, you know, even like me, the most unathletic person in the world, I still played like t-ball and kickball in the streets and whatever. But I think you're right, like today kids just have too much distraction, and mm-hmm. parents rely on that. And
they were talking about how kids, our parents will not say turn off the TV and go outside. They'll just allow it, you know, to mm-hmm. to play TV or play games. But my childhood was like that, and I was forced to be creative because there was nothing else to do. And so I would come up with stories. My family, my grandpa most especially, would always told stories, just stories upon stories upon stories, and I always liked that. That's pretty much what I wanted to do. I just wanted to tell stories. And then I was a musician from the time I was 6. I played the piano. I started taking piano lessons.
Really?
And then, you know, I like to draw, and I like to build stuff. And then I love to take pictures. I had an old 110 photo camera, you know, not even like 35 millimeter. You remember the long ones that were like this long and really,
oh, really skinny?
Yeah.
And you had, you had like, something on the bottom with your thumb. You have like...
Yeah. And so I had one of those, and I would constantly, you know, get film for it and take pictures. And so I could combine all those arts together in film, which was, you know, a VHS camcorder that this old beat up used one my parents bought when I was about 8 years old. And then starting when I was 9, you know, during the week at school, I would come up with ideas and stories, and my friends and I would shoot them on the weekends.
Do you remember the first thing that you shot?
I remember one of the first things I shot.
What was it?
A lot of my early stuff was very violent, you know. And so one of the first ones I shot was me and my friend Glenn. And I'm probably 8 or 9. It was a Sunday afternoon. And I set up the camera in the front yard. And he and I fought. We wanted to do a fight scene. But it wasn't like multiple camera angles or anything. This was just set the camera up and fight. And the thing is, we were like, you know what, we're really going to hit each other. We're not going to do any fake stuff. And so, I mean, a lot of it's just us, you know, like walking in circles, you know, and you know, taunting each other and whatnot. But there's one part about 5 or 6 minutes in, Glenn rears back and he's left-handed, and he brings his left hook around and just nails me right between the eyes.
Oh, God.
And I fall out. It didn't knock me out. I'm laughing as I go down, but it hurt. It hurt really badly.
That must have made a great scene, though.
Yeah. And so, you know, for a good year, that was a highlight. You know, and friends would go, hey, watch this, you know, and watch it, you know, frame by frame on the VCR. And then, thunk, you'd see me get hit. And
Did you? So you only did that from one angle? You didn't, like, try to do pickup shots?
No. Not in the beginning. But soon enough, you know, it turned into, you know, all these sorts of angles.
Do you still have the video?
Every one of them.
Do you really?
There's one that I don't have, actually, and I'm really sad about it because it was a quote-unquote special effects extravaganza, but it got recorded over on accident.
Oh.
And right whenever it happened, the day we were shooting over the tape, at the end of the day, I pulled the tape out and saw that it was the one we'd done about a couple weeks before. And yeah, it did. I really wish I had that because I remember it, but it's only in my mind. There's only two people who've ever seen it. And I bet the other guy doesn't even remember it. But
how do you like that?
Yeah.
You're the only person in the world with that memory.
Yeah. And it's pretty cool. We did rain. It was real rain. But if we kept things in close-up, and I took a miniature trampoline and a water hose with one of those sprayers mm-hmm. on the end, and the trampoline had these springs that were set in a V, and I could lodge the sprayer and hose into that just right where it would, you wouldn't have to have someone hold it because there were just two people making the movie. and it would sit there and spray this perfect stream that would arc over and hit us right in the face in close up. And so, we're sitting there and we're fighting and fighting. And then one of us gets punched out and falls on the ground. And then the other one takes a gun and puts it to the other one's face. And we had a M60 firecracker that we would tape on the end of this black BB pistol. But this is before they had orange tips and stuff on. I mean, this sucker looked real, you know. And we would tape it on there with black electrical tape so you couldn't see it. And held it up to the face. And it goes, pow.
Oh, gee.
But,
wait, you were like 9?
I was older at this point.
10?
But, no. I was probably like 13 or so. I should have known
better.
That's
still sociopathic behavior. Yeah. You realize that?
Well, I think I may have been the one who got shot. Yeah, I think I was. So, it was okay. It was for the movie. You know,
did you have like a burn mark or something on your face?
No. It actually cut the other guy's shin. The piece of plastic, whenever it blew up, the piece of plastic on the end of the firecracker went across his shin and just gave him a nice little cut there.
That's good. See, it's. I mean, on one hand, I'm like, God, that's so fucking violent for like 13-year-old. But yeah. On the other hand, it's like that's what boys should be doing when they're a kid, just getting into scrapes and everything.
We'd made a lot of like Rambo and Army, you know, sort of movies.
Have you seen but just quick side note as far as like those kind of movies, have you seen the previews for Expendables 2?
I have indeed.
Did you get a man boner?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Actually a big bit.
A big bit. I mean, Allison and I just saw a movie today. We're walking out and there's this huge what do they call stand up?
The cardboard thing.
Cardboard big kind of display for Expendables 2 and it's like, holy fuck. Schwarzenegger, Van Damme, Norris, Stallone. Statham, like holy
Bruce Willis.
Oh my God, yeah. This is gonna be so fucking.
Now you've
epic.
Seen the original, the first one, right?
The first, yeah,
yeah, yeah. I went to the movie theater to see, and the thing is, as much as my early work was like that, my new stuff is not like that at all. The stuff that I do.
I would love for you to see you do an action adventure movie.
Well, I did do an action film in May. It wasn't May. I guess it was March or April. And it just finished, and it's doing a festival thing now. It's a short film. It's the first, like, full-action film I've done. And
was that the one you showed me a clip of with the guy in the chair?
Yeah, that's
okay,
it.
Cool.
And it has a big fight scene in the end, and a guy gets
Yeah,
his
yeah,
ass
yeah.
Beat
yeah. And you told me you had trouble shooting that.
Yeah. I mean, it's... Time was the trouble. You know, I mean, there was... And the camera we were using was the 5D, and I don't really like that camera very much, and... anyway, I don't want to get into technical jargon or anything.
No, it's okay. But the show's just about shooting the show.
Okay. Well, but it's it turned out pretty good. Like, I'm actually proud of it. Originally, I didn't know how it would turn out while we were shooting it. I thought some of the stuff was looking good, but, you know, you never really know until it's done.
Until it's done, yeah. How long have you been out in LA now?
Since 2010.
Okay, so just over 2 years.
Not even a full 2 years. I came out in the fall of 2000.
Okay, so almost 2 years.
Yeah.
How many films have you made in the 2 years you've been out here?
I have no idea.
Guesstimate.
20.
20?
Yeah.
That's amazing for
you.
That is really amazing.
I mean, there may be more than that. I'm not sure. Not many more than that. But
any like special kind of movies that involve women doing special
I've never went to that level.
Have you been approached? Has someone ever emailed you, hey, we're looking for a DP to shoot a DP?
No. but I have had, you know, a few people, you know, ask me, what do you do? Because I am a director of photography. And I say, oh, I'm a DP, and they're like, and they're like, oh, God, come on.
For those who don't know, DP is a term in the porn world, meaning double penetration, I've heard.
Or so I hear.
I do research on DP because I knew you were a DP, so I wanted to make sure I knew the difference.
Oh.
So I watched a 5-minute YouTube video about director photography and a 5-day research project on double penetration.
Oh, yeah.
And I prefer one over the other.
The latter.
No, I find it very interesting because when I, well, you know, If you're not on the mic, no one can hear you, and your snide, silly comments go nowhere. No, when I was in April, when I was shooting the film that I did, I stood in the, you know, video village, as I call it, where all the monitors are, and I found it very interesting because the DP on the film, his name is Rudy, and they're, you know, they were calling out like, "No, make his French." He was like, "Make the lighting a little," and I remember like at some points I'm shooting the scene, and he's like, "No, the lighting needs to be this and that," and I'm thinking, how does lighting make any kind of difference? Like, we're shooting, you know, an interior doing this, and it, and then I saw playback. I'm like, wow, that really made a huge difference. Yeah. Like, I think people very much underestimate the subtleties and all the specific things that a DP needs to know to make the shot look exactly the way that it's supposed to look. As far like, are the skills that you have now, did you learn that in film school, or a lot of them you just kind of picked up by doing it?
No, I mean, I did experiment a little bit with lighting when I was younger, but not really. It was mostly shots and stuff like that. And then whenever I was in college, I didn't go to film school. I just went to a liberal arts college.
Oh, you didn't go to film school?
Mm-mm. No. No,
but you're very good.
Thank you.
So you kind of learned just...
Actually, I just learned reading books and watching movies. Watching, you know, honestly, you know, I'm a huge fan of Lord of the Rings. You know this. I've talked a lot about
it. Yes, you've got the tattoo on your arm.
I do. It's that bad. But
that's awesome.
The Lord of the Rings kind of came out at a pivotal time when I was in college. It came out, and I, you know, I was watching it, and then the DVDs on the extended edition DVDs had two discs of nothing but special features, and I honestly learned a lot about filmmaking from The Lord of the Rings. Just
really?
Watching this stuff over and over, and then watching the movie and saying, oh, well, that's how they do that, and that's how they did that.
So Peter Jackson was essentially your teacher?
A little bit, yeah. Peter Jackson and in books. I mean, this is in the day before, you know, Wikipedia and YouTube, so back when you had to actually read books, you know, to figure stuff out.
What are
and,
books?
But yeah, so, and I mean, the school that I went to had cameras and stuff, and I got to use them at any time I wanted, but it was, you know, I mean, this was before, HD did exist, but we didn't have it, you know, it had just, it was a new deal, and, but yeah, it wasn't a film program at the school per se, it was a, they called it mass media, but it was newspaper journalism and some TV journalism.
Okay.
So I sort of made my own film program. A lot of my professors would say, oh, do this, you know.
Well, didn't you say you taught film or something?
I did, yeah, after I graduated college.
So I guess it wasn't at the college you went to then?
No.
Okay.
Now, I did teach a couple of classes while I was in college. I taught the college classes. My professor would put me in charge of teaching these classes.
Oh, you were such a teacher's pet.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I was more like a buddy. Like, I was, you know, it wasn't like he treated me special. Like, I busted my ass harder than any other person. You know, it wasn't. And but he was young, and
he took you out to dinner, bought you special presents, honestly, took you on some trips to Hawaii.
Yeah. Actually, he did take us to Vegas and New York as a group. Like, our school went, the media department. But yeah, so I did these projects. They would, you know, say, do a interview with some person. I'm like, can I do a short film? Here's a 15-page script that I've been wanting to do. You know, it's going to take me a month to do this, and you're giving us a month, you know. So either shoot an interview or shoot a short film. It's much more difficult, you know. And anyway, so that's what I did a lot, and sort of taught myself that way through experience. And then my final year of college, I, by really, really chance luck, got on my first feature film that was shooting in Arkansas. And it was for Arkansas, it was a big budget film. It was nearly $2 million. And
what was the film?
War Eagle, Arkansas is what it was called. It
has War Eagle, Arkansas?
Mm-hmm. Okay. It was originally called War Eagle. They added the Arkansas in there, which I don't know if that was a good idea. It had Brian Dennehy in it, and Mary Kay Place was in it, and Mary Winningham. And this guy named Luke Grimes was the lead role, and he's actually getting really big right now. This is in 2006, but he's in the new, you remember that Liam Neeson movie, Taken?
Yeah.
They're doing a sequel to it, and he's one of the leads in it.
Taken again?
Taken Back.
Taken Back? Is that really it?
No. Ugh. I think it's called Taken 2, but.
Taken 2.
Where? Oh. Taken 2 where?
You got to hold the bottom.
Taken to where?
Taken to... See, the third time she said it, it's funny.
Comedy's in threes.
Comedy is in threes. I never saw Taken. I heard it was great, though.
It is. It's really good.
Well, actually, do me a favor real quick. Side note, because you know a lot about films, and I was trying... Because I had not seen Drive.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah.
I heard it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I was trying to get her to watch it last night on Netflix, and she's like, I don't know.
Did you watch it?
What did we end up watching?
Law and Order SVU.
Oh, that's right. We watched Law and Order.
Well, I just recently got turned on to the show. I'd never seen it before, and it's awesome. I didn't realize it's been on for 13 years.
Yeah, but we were going to watch a movie, and everything we were looking at, no, I don't know. I'm picking out movies that I heard.
Because everything was like fantastical. We were all like thinking of doing all the fantasy movies that are out right now. And then we come home and, I don't know, we got suckered in. So Drive wasn't...
Pictured in, because you've seen it, I haven't.
I never even heard of Drive.
In two sentences, picture the movie.
I'll do it in one sentence.
Okay.
Drive is one of my top five favorite films of all time.
Wow.
This is coming from a filmmaker.
And then the same director, Nicholas Winding Refn, he's done three feature films, I think, and then he did the Pusher series, which was big in England, not so much here. But anyway, this guy, he's a pretty young guy, and he has two films in my top 10 of all time.
What's the other one?
Valhalla Rising.
Don't know it.
It's he's even more so than Drive. It's a very abstract.
Well, Valhalla, that was that's like the
Norse,
a Nordic, Nordic, like God, where the gods live, like mm-hmm. the Nordic Mount Olympus kind of thing.
And you should see that movie. It's very artsy fartsy. So keep that in mind. Like, it may not be, you know, I don't know how you feel.
You know
about
what? Another movie that came out that I want to see, Melancholia.
Yeah, it's on there too.
Yeah, that Netflix. That looks very artsy fartsy, but incredibly interesting too. That's
Lars
like
von Trier is known for being. I think the guy's a genius, like a filmmaking genius. He put his foot in his mouth big time last year.
What did he do?
Said some rather anti-Semitic things. But
was he melancholy about it?
I really don't know what he was thinking whenever he said it. It was like, really? He blamed it on being pestered by the paparazzi, but it's like, what?
Would he say something about the Jew media or something?
No. He just, I don't really know what context it was in, but he said he sympathized with Hitler in some way. And he said that in France at Cannes, and it was like, you moron, you just really, really screwed up. But and then he came back and said, you know, that's not what he meant, and he's never doing any press stuff ever again.
Well, yeah, it's kind of hard to follow the sympathize with Hitler quotes.
Yeah. So
anything else? Well, Mussolini kind of had the right idea.
Oh, that Joseph Stalin.
Stalin wasn't all bad. Come on. Okay, look, Osama bin Laden. I'll give it to you. He needed to shave. But other than that, I don't see the big deal.
Hey, you know what? Stalin has a great name. Do you know what Stalin means?
It means you're...
you can't move for a short period of time.
Or you're trying to get somebody to keep talking so you can
clever.
Figure out a plan.
Yeah. It actually means man of steel, literally.
Stalin!
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Superman is Stalin?
Your name is Joseph Man of Steel. That's a pretty hard
Joe
ass name.
Man of Steel.
That's a pretty badass name.
No more Joe the Schmo.
So wait, does that mean in Russia, when the new Superman come out, it's going to be called Stalin? Because it's called Man of Steel?
Perhaps. That'd be awesome, right?
I've seen Stalin in theater. It is so good. The way Stalin flies. Oh,
but what does Mussolini man mean? Does it like...
Batman.
Man full of muscles?
In Italy.
Man full of muscles.
he's got lean muscles. Mussolini. He's a lean man. He's got lean... I don't know.
It's so...
I'm sorry.
No, you know what? I love you.
What? I beat you to it. That's
no, because you're so damn cheesy and silly like me.
Oh.
I think I have the perfect wife for me, and you definitely have the perfect wife for you. No, that's something else, because Allison and I, we're both comedians. Your wife Elena. Can I say her name?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I was gonna bleep it out.
Well, she was gonna come up here and talk, but she got caught up watching Dancing with the Stars, which I had to say that she really hasn't watched the show in years. She's not like a
Dancing with the Stars. So you think you can dance?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, So You Think You Can Dance? Yes. Not Dancing with the Stars. She's never watched that.
I'm madly in love with that show. Madly in love.
She's a dancer.
She is a dancer,
and she really she used to really watch that show a lot and like it. But we don't.
Allison has made me very gay. I love that show.
I've made you very gay.
I could turn your microphone off very easily. I have the board.
I love you.
sounded Italian. I love you.
Oh no, she gets weirder sounds. You've heard them. But with Elena,
that didn't sound right. Our neighbors downstairs. You've heard the weird noises my wife makes.
Ow!
It's true.
No, I haven't. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to see any of Elena's shows, but I hear from Allison that she's brilliant, very talented.
I would agree.
Yes, I hope you would. Beautiful. This is going out there. You better say you agree. Now, do you find it, number one, does it make it easier that Elena is in the business, in this kind of entertainment business? She understands. She's not kind of giving you shit.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because early on in our marriage, like we've been married nearly 8 years now. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy because we're really not that old. You know, it's a Southern thing, getting married young and all that.
How old were you got married?
19.
Can I ask you a very personal question?
Absolutely.
Is she the only girl you've ever been with?
Oh, that's ish.
Say no more. What's that, honey?
I was going to say, that's why you're like,
I just
welcome
said,
to the
can I
show.
Ask you a personal question?
Have you ever been with your wife? Go with the clock. Ding.
Okay, you got to hold it from the bottom.
I
you
can't,
sit
okay.
Like this. Look, honey, hold it like this.
Like you're cupping balls. And just keep it together like that.
Do you know
like
how
this?
To do that?
Yes.
Do you know how to cup the balls?
Do you know how to cup balls? See, there's a personal question.
There we go. I am definitely a very good ball cupper.
A ball cupper?
I leave room for both.
Okay, show Derek.
This is how it happens. I'm not going to show Derek on his person.
I just want to see if you'd even pretend to get up. Or, by the way, he didn't flinch. I said, show Derek, and you're like, you just kind of went, all right, show me. We're neighbors.
Lean back a little bit. I lean back a little further.
I'm like, here is my... I'm like, you think I'm getting up from this lazy boy? You've got another thing coming.
You cut my balls, I will have another thing coming.
Oh.
Anyway.
Welcome
hello?
To the show. It eventually becomes like all weird fucking
all
sex
weird
talk.
Sexual stuff. So I'm sorry, back to my original question. So you and Elaine
originally when we first started dating when we went to college, I actually sort of blame her for me doing film because she's the one who told me, because I had an architecture scholarship to Louisiana Tech, to of like a full ride scholarship to design architecture. And she told me, she said, and I just wanted to do movies, but, you know, especially coming from Arkansas, people are like, yeah, do something, you know, that's grounded, you know, something that you can't make a living in movies. You're not even, you know, you're never going to make it. So anyway, you know, I guess a little bit of that got in my head. And so she said, you know what, if you want to do movies, do movies. Go to Henderson, which is this liberal arts school, and you know, and try to make as many, you know, just try to do what you want to do there, and if it doesn't work out, you can always go back and go get an architecture degree in design architecture, and with that, the beast was created, you know, and but she early on, I mean, she would get so mad at me because I would just talk about movies and talk about movies. And I was always making movies and wanting to talk about my ideas and stuff like that, and it just drove her bonkers. But in the last 8 years of us being married, she has now gotten very excited about it, and she just wrote her first feature a few weeks ago. She finished the first draft, and now it's three drafts in, and it's really good. And she wants to direct it, which she's worked on a few feature films with me. Like
I was gonna say, like Derek made a full length feature film called Come Morning that Allison and I we went down and saw a showing of it. Very good movie.
Thank you.
Very hilarious. Hilarious.
Oh man.
My God.
The comedy doesn't stop.
It doesn't
stop.
If you can't find something to laugh at in that film, you know, you've got
no, it's a very serious film. A lot of
it's pretty miserable, actually.
Well, it's not a miserable movie. It's just I don't say miserable subject.
It's dark.
It's dark. It's very dark.
I used to explain it early on that it was a cloudy day, and there was never a ray of sunshine in it. You know, it's just kind of like the whole movie is just cloudy.
Well, it definitely has a, I guess for lack of a better term, a kind of gloomy sense about it because of the subject matter and the
which
way
is death.
I don't want to tip the bit or spoil it.
I'm very comfortable, and it's all out on the internet about the general gist of the story, which is Grandpa and his grandson are deer hunting in the 1970s, and
on my birthday in the 1970s.
Is it really your birthday?
It was November 10th. Right?
Yeah, that's
it. That's my birthday.
LB. What year were you born?
74.
Oh, sweet. It happened 2 years. 1970. No, it happened 1 year to the day of Flip's birth.
Wow, 1 year before my birthday?
Yeah, before
I was
birthday,
born?
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Hey. I'm sorry, just heard. I say that again?
So maybe you're the guy reincarnated.
The guy that got shot?
Maybe.
The guy who got. There's a couple of deaths in there.
You're Marion Mitchell reincarnate.
He kind of looks like the clean-shaven new version of him.
You just need a lot.
Get off my land.
But that's what it's about too. It's like land disputes, and you know something that I hope it translates well, because in the South, the material is very real.
Yeah, you're
like
saying
it's
that.
Even in the South, the story will ring very true because that sort of thing happens even to this day. I mean, not so much as dramatic of a fashion, but land disputes are a big deal there. And so I hope that translates the danger of the situation.
Yeah, because when we watched that, obviously I didn't realize that stuff still went on. Because again, we grew up, Alice and I, both in metropolitan areas where land dispute. You know, you go to city council, like his tree root is coming onto my land and it's disrupting the whole feng shui. So can you please cut the tree root out?
But it wasn't even their tree root; it was actually the city's tree root. Oh. Nobody owned the land.
It's the Russian tree root. But in your movie, it's depicted as like a serious, like a almost like a violent.
Borderline deadly. Sort of thing, like it comes to...
And again, I don't know how much you want to give away about the film, but has the... What happened in the film, has that actually... Was that kind of based on a real thing that happened that you knew of?
No, it wasn't based off of any particular thing. The idea came to me... I was driving to work one day, and it wasn't even about land disputes originally. It was just... I had this idea of a grandson and his grandfather, which you don't see in the movies very often. You never see a grandson and his grandfather. You see a father-son story or something like that.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Ah, good one.
Thank
good
you.
One.
That'd be great if Willy Wonka turned out to be like, come morning. Yeah. Come on, Charlie. Give me my gun. We're going to blow this Wonka away.
And then they all march onto the factory.
Yeah. And the Oompa Loompas are behind it with like pitchforks and torches. Fuck you, Wonka.
And it's and instead of a candy factory, it's a, I don't know, like a lumberjack meal.
Like a lumber mill. Willy Wonka's Charlie lumber. And the lumber mill.
That'd be good.
I've got a golden splinter. I've got a golden splinter.
I've got a golden pickaxe.
Yeah, but you know, I'm trying to think. You don't really see too many grandfather-grandson films, really.
Well, and that's... the grandfather is loosely based on my own grandfather. And he was the one, you know, who liked to tell the stories and stuff a lot. And so I guess that it's sort of a tribute to him, I guess.
So even you were driving in your car and you thought of your grandfather, you thought of stories?
Yeah, it wasn't even him that came to mind. I literally thought, because he and I used to go hunting together when I was little, and it just came to my mind, what if this grandfather and his grandson were out deer hunting one day? And I was imagining it in the same location that, you know,
that you grew up in.
Yeah, yeah. And so I said, they're waiting and waiting, it's late in the afternoon. And then they see a deer, they shoot the deer, and when they go to track it down, they're tracking its blood down. What they saw was not a deer at all, and what they killed was actually their neighbor, who was trespassing on their land, but they had this awful history with this neighbor. And so I that's literally the line. I called one of my producer friends and said, that's exactly what I said to him, pretty much verbatim. He said, oh, you should write that down. You should write that down. And so I wrote it down, and then it became, I sort of based the characters of the grandpa and the grandson loosely on me. The script, they're loosely based on us, and then even more in the movie, it's less of us. It became a story into itself, you know, but you write based on what you
know. What you know, of course.
And so, and whenever I imagine the stuff, I imagine it in the locations, you know, geographically, I'm going through, okay, this is which way they would go, and this way, and this way. That's not where we shot it. Actually, one or two of the places were where I actually imagined it.
Well, you said, like, one of the shots was a grandfather, grandson. I don't know what you'd call it, but I would describe it as like a little shack where they'd wait for the deer, like a little wooden, almost like outhouse. Just
interesting story about that. That where we shot that is not where it originally happened. It's actually about 10 miles away. The area that my grandpa and I used to hunt, we used to hunt in one of those little shacks that because he couldn't climb into a deer stand, you know, like up in the tree.
So you couldn't?
He couldn't.
Oh, he couldn't, yeah. I see.
And so he had to have kind of like a little shed on the ground. And so that area, though, a storm came through 10 years ago and really changed the landscape through there, really knocked down a lot of the big giant oak trees and stuff. And so it doesn't look the same as it did when I was a kid. So I found an area that looked almost the exact same as that place did when I was a kid. It was about 10 miles away. But what we did is we took apart my grandpa's deer house, moved it 10 miles away, and built it there. We just took the walls off of it, and then we built a whole new skeleton around it, and then put the original walls on it.
Wow.
And so that's actually what you see in the movie is the deer house that I hunted in when I was a kid.
And you're,
20 years ago.
Neat.
Yeah.
Are you on?
Am I on?
Yeah, you are.
Okay. Yeah.
That's very neat. Has your grandfather seen the film?
No, he hasn't. In fact, no one from, we shot it in Arkansas. We went back to Arkansas last October and shot it. But no one from Arkansas has seen the movie except for my parents, and they actually came out to L.A. about a month ago.
I met them.
And they got to watch it. And then one of the producers in Arkansas and the composer is from Arkansas, and they've seen it, but no one else has seen it.
When your parents, first of all, when your dad, I guess, saw the little shed shack, did he kind of go, hey, is that the, that looks
just like... He knew, because we shot it in the area where I was from, and so my parents were, came to set just about every day.
Oh, cool.
And not to hang out and have fun, but to help because we had a crew. Come Morning was shot for an insanely low budget of $46,000, which is nothing. Literally, our lights and camera, because me being a DP, this is, by the way, Come Morning's the only feature film I've ever directed, to like write and direct. I'm usually just a DP. But being a DP and DPing this film as well, I'm naturally going to have good lights and camera and everything since I have control over it. So, but more than half our budget, about 55 or 60% of our budget went just to camera, lenses, and lights. And it was a 12-day shoot. It was miserable. It was awful. It was a huge pain in the ass. But
those are always the best, though.
Yeah.
Because there's so much heart and work going into it because you're up against so many odds that when you're doing it, you feel, I think, a certain intensity, a certain passion toward it than if everything was kind of just like, oh, well, that worked out great. This worked out great, too. This is so easy.
Yeah.
You know, I think with obstacles comes a much better product, depending on what it is.
Well, it was definitely insanity-inducing, the whole thing, because there were only, at most, 10 people working on the movie.
But was it worth it?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. No, I'm like the movie. I'd
love it for him to go, no, it's a piece of shit.
The movie is a colossal piece of crap, and I don't, that's just a waste of money and time. No, you know, I, the same producer friend that I pitched it to and ultimately produced the movie, he told me right whenever we wrapped, he said, because he and I worked together quite a bit, he said, and he's directed his first feature film about 4 years ago. He said, now listen, what you had in your mind in the beginning, you know, and what you shot now and what you have is something that's going to be different than what you originally imagined. And you're going to have to accept that or you're going to be completely miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd already at that point sort of accepted it a little bit. And when I got back to LA and started cutting on it, it didn't take me hardly any time at all. I mean, I would get frustrated with it, you know, but, you know, we didn't get this. I wish we would have gotten these 9 setups instead of these 4 or 3, you know, or something like that. But yeah, just time and money were huge hindrances and like having manpower there. But at the same time, I'm very proud of the movie.
You should be. It's a great
movie. And thank you. But I think that unlike a lot of movies I do, I'm really proud of this one. I'm glad, really glad we did it.
Yeah, really, and it's going to be the first of many, I'm sure.
Yeah, I tell people I'm not really that interested in directing. I wanted to do this one. I tell them I want to direct something when I have something to say, which isn't very often. Otherwise, I just want to make pictures. You know, I just want to light and shoot. The film.
Now, who would be like the director that you would most want to work with?
As a DP?
As a DP.
Oh man, Well, I really, really like Terrence Malick, the director. His films would be. The thing is, though, he almost always uses just natural light. And so, you know, I mean, you have to get creative with natural light instead and this is weird me saying this because I've never thought about that. Like, I have my favorite directors and the people who I just love to watch their work, and favorite DPs who I just love to watch their work. But I think one of the funnest things to shoot are like maybe like a J.J. Abrams movie or something, which I take his movies for what they are. You know, they're good, fun movies, but, you know, they're not colossal works of art, which are really what I like to watch.
So you'd want to work more on the special effects kind of end of it?
No, I just think it'd be...
Because that's what his movies pretty much...
But I think that would be fun, you know? Not that I would want to do that always, because I'm not a huge, like, popcorn studio movie kind of fan, but...
Okay, I'm going to throw out names of directors, and you tell just yes, no, if you
if
would...
If I would want to work with them?
If they'd be in your top 5.
Okay. Oh, man. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, and I'm not saying, well...
Top 5, like...
He's going to have a lot of top 5s, because if you start naming people, he's like, well, yeah, actually.
Okay. Then I guess just yes or no.
Okay.
Yes or no.
Now, are these ones that I would want to shoot their movies?
Yes.
Okay.
You'd want to work with them.
I would want
Wait,
to work
real
with them.
Quick before you do this.
Oh, but I don't
Who's
work with
Terrence Malick? You said it before, and I'm like, I have no idea. What's a movie that he's done?
His most recent movie was Tree of Life.
Brad Pitt.
His one before that was The New World. His one before that was The Thin Red Line.
Didn't he also do The Fountain?
No, that was Darren Aronofsky.
Darren Aronofsky, sorry.
I've never heard of any of these.
He did...
they're on Netflix.
Days of Heaven. Days of Heaven and Thin Red Line are both on Netflix.
Thin Red Line, that's a war movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no.
I didn't see it. I'm just basing it on what I remember.
I think it came out the year after Saving Private Ryan, and I think a lot of people were thrown off by it because it wasn't Saving Private Ryan, because Saving Private Ryan was such a big deal, you know, and it really set the bar for that genre. I think Saving Private Ryan, as much as, I mean, I like the movie, I don't love the movie, but visually it really is a staple, you know, like movies that came after it look like Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, my God. That I saw that in the theaters, and I remember just like, You can't help but feel that you were in the middle of a war.
Yeah.
Like you were in the middle of a war.
I think the Omaha Beach invasion in that movie is perfect.
Yes.
I think that part of the movie I absolutely love. The rest of the movie I think is fine.
You know, it's funny. It was on the other night. It might have been on... No, it was on... I think it had to be on regular television. That scene toward the end with the... with the German soldier that they initially let go, and he was in having that fight. I forgot the actor's name, the one from Beautiful Mind, the Hebrew Hammer, the Jewish looking guy.
Mm-hmm. He was the boyfriend.
Adam Green.
I know who you're talking about.
Is he the boyfriend in Adam's Family too?
No.
Different guy.
No.
This is the level of movies. See, you guys are talking about your level, and I'm like, now Adam's Family too.
Well, this scene, you know, when they're fighting and with a knife, when he's
yeah,
I saw that in the theater, and I was like, I think I ripped the armrest off the seat because it was just such a tense and like real moment. And matter of fact, when it was on the other day, it was right at that point, and I had to change it. I couldn't watch it again. It was just so intense and so damn real.
When Barry Pepper is the sniper on the tower, and all that's it's a great movie. But I like it. I actually like The Thin Red Line more.
No, I'll have to see it.
But a lot of people, but it's completely different. And I think that's what turned a lot of people off. It's a Terrence Malick film. Like, if you've seen one, you know, I was going to say, if you've seen one, you've seen them all, but that's not true. He has a very similar, unique style. And if you see a Terrence Malick film, you know it's his. It's not, a lot of people, you know, are bored by his films.
He's artsy.
Yeah, he's an art guy.
He's definitely not a summer blockbuster kind of director.
Which is weird because he's from Texas and he lives in Texas. He refuses to go to LA. Jeff Nichols, who we were talking about earlier, from Arkansas. Like, these very prominent artistic directors
coming from
the South.
South has a lot to offer, man.
But I think some of that may be like the poet, because both of them, especially Terrence Malick, his stuff is very poetic, and I think that poetry can come from that boredom and that desolation, but at the same time the beauty, you know.
Totally.
Of that.
Okay, so we'll start with Terrence Malick.
Ah, yes.
Okay.
But he uses the same cinematographer for all of his stuff now. So.
Well, this is our game.
Okay. So all right. Yeah.
Take that.
So Terrence, that would be a dream.
Okay. So Terrence Malick.
Yeah.
Spielberg.
I think I'm probably going to say yes to just about all these. Even though I think Steven Spielberg, I like him. I don't think he's done great stuff recently. I think Minority Report was my last thing that I liked of his. Which, by the way, is another one of those movies that set a bar
for future-looking films.
Just, yeah. I mean, just about anything science fiction owes it to...
Gus Van Sant.
I like Gus Van Sant. And yes, I mean, of course, I would love to shoot something of his, but he wouldn't be someone that, I mean, if he called me and said, hey, do you want to shoot my film? Well, hell yeah, I'd want to shoot.
But he's not at the top of the list.
No.
Of like, not. Dream. Jay Levy.
I don't even know who that is.
He directed UHF. Sorry, just got to throw that in.
Jay Levy?
Jay Levy. He's Weird Al's manager. Okay. Directed UHF.
Has he directed anything else?
I don't think so. Maybe music videos.
Videos?
Probably. Okay. Let's go a little...
Darren Aronofsky.
Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely. I think that The Fountain... The Fountain's actually one of my favorite movies of his, even though a lot of people didn't like it.
Didn't see it.
But it's by far his most beautiful film.
See, I am a very big fan of The Wrestler.
Yeah, I like that film a lot.
Wrestler... you got to watch that one,
dude.
Is it on Netflix Instant?
I have the DVD.
Wonderful.
I guess anybody in the entertainment business could relate to that movie.
Yeah.
You know, but specifically as a comedian, I saw that in the theaters and I was just like, holy God, I know so many comics who are like that, who are just huge, especially in the 80s, and now doing shitty one-nighters or like, I'll do a open mic here or there, but I got my job over here doing this. And like, it's one of my biggest fears. I don't even want to put it out there. But beautiful movie. Mickey Rourke, extraordinary.
Yeah.
That's the helicopter outside of our apartment that likes to fly very low.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yes, it sucks.
Darren Aronofsky, I love Black Swan. I know I didn't see Wrestler. I heard that was fabulous. But still to this day, I've only seen pieces of it. And still to this day, I cannot watch Requiem for a Dream just from the few pieces I've seen. It's like... He does some stuff that's usually always so deeply tormented, like or he targets that kind of subject matter that's like deeply, deeply tormented stuff, and it's stuff that'll like get into your psyche and really
gets into your soul.
Yeah, I think he's good at that.
Yeah, very, very.
I've heard, and I can assume, and hopefully he'll never hear this, but I've heard that, you know,
Darren Aronofsky is a big fan of my podcast. Well, So Darren, pay attention here.
Well, I have heard, and I can infer from like behind the scenes stuff that I've seen him, that he can be difficult to work with. But I think that's actually probably common with a lot of high art. You know,
I was going to say the one. Huckabees? Who? What's that?
You're going to say the director from
I Heart Huckabees?
Oh, yeah. Did you? I'll go ahead and put that out there. I don't like him at all.
you and Lily Tomlin both.
I didn't. I saw Lily Tomlin at the farmer's market not too long ago.
The one that we went to?
No, the one in Hollywood. The food, you know, the one on Fairfax. No. But yeah, I just like walked right beside her, and I was like, "Holy crap, that's Lily Tomlin!" And Elena and my friend Maurice were with me, and they were like, "No, it's not, no, it's not." I said, "Okay, let's turn around and look." So we stand there, and I think we walked right. I was like, "You know what? I'm gonna walk right back by her," and for sure it was. And it's funny that Elena, when I say, "Look, it's Lily Tomlin," Elena immediately thinks the Magic School Bus. She's Miss Frizzle on the Magic School Bus.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
PBS.
Okay. That was Dee Dee Cohen.
Exactly. Thank you.
You're welcome.
But yeah, the director that I'm trying to think of what his name is. I didn't like I Heart Huckabees. I'm one of the few, but I found it completely annoying.
I saw my friend who's into a lot of existentialism said you got to see this movie. And I saw it, and I was like, okay, this is interesting. And then Allison and I, and Allison didn't initially like it at all. And then lately we've got into our kind of spirituality and blah, blah, blah. And then we watched it again, and it just made so much more sense to us mm-hmm. now. When's the last time you saw it?
When I was in college.
Oh, you should give it another shot.
It takes a few it's one of those movies I bought it because it had the all-star cast. It's one of the movies I bought before watching.
Yeah.
Where I almost just assumed I was going to love it. And then I ended up not liking it at all, putting it on a shelf. And people didn't understand it. It throws too much information at you.
Did you turn it off?
Have I seriously been talking?
You've been talking with the microphone off this whole fucking time. You're awful comedian. That's the first thing you got to know about being a comic. When you have a microphone, make sure the on switch is on.
Flip's like sitting there freaking out, like it's not turning on.
I'm looking at the board. Like, why am I not getting levels?
Here, let me try to reenact exactly. Basically, what I was saying was initially I hated it. It was a movie that I bought without seeing it, but only assuming that I would like it. And, of course, I didn't like it. Sat on the shelf for years. And only now that I started to get into the subject matter that the movie's about did I get even remotely part of it. I probably could see it a couple more times and understand a heck of a lot more. By gum.
By gum, indeed. Speaking of gum, this has nothing to do with gum. It's the worst segue ever. We've reached the point of the podcast where we now do a little part called the Skippy Green Show.
It's the Skippy Green Show.
Hello, Derek.
Good evening, Skippy.
That's a polite. You shut your fucking mouth. Never turn your mic off. Now turn your mic off.
Now that you've got it on, turn it off.
Turn it off. I don't give a shit. That was a polite young man. He said, "Good evening, Skippy." That's how you address an old man of my caliber. So, Mr. Sims, first of all, big fan of your movies. Never seen any of them, but I heard they're great.
Thank you.
Yep. Very polite. That's a kid from Arkansas. Now, I need you to answer this question.
All right.
In 10 words exactly. Not 11.
Okay.
Not 9. 10 words. Answer the following question. If you were going to shave your pubes into a shape of something, what would it be and why? 10 words.
Exactly.
The 10 words don't start right now. Is this a complete sentence or
10 words? Don't say, well, teepee, Mussolini, Stalin, light bulb, eagle, lollipop, rock candy.
I'd like to see him make his pubes into Mussolini. That would be awesome.
What part of turn your microphone off don't you understand, you empty-headed twat? 10 words exactly.
Stalin. And because who wouldn't want Man of Steel there?
I think he got it. Give him his cigar.
That is absolutely correct. No.
Guess what you win?
What?
Nothing.
Yes.
No, actually, guess what you win? Allison will now make your dream come true. Get out the razor and drop your pants. We're about to make some steel cock.
I'm just going to make... Didn't Stalin have a mustache? I'm just going to make like a big mustache.
Quit Stalin. Get to it.
You know, you said Mussolini, but I was just thinking that would be kind of... You know, you don't want Mussolini. It just feels kind of...
No, or mousse down there. Any kind of mousse. Hair product on there at all, I would not recommend.
But your whole sentence made sense, which was that's part of the test. Skippy, he passed the test.
He did pass the test. That's unlike me, every test I fail. Math, algebra, HIV. Of course you knew. You gave it to me. Skippy Green Show. Oh, that was Skippy Green Show. And I can't think of a better way to end this show than on a HIV herpes joke.
All right.
Derek, thanks so much for coming by, man.
Absolutely.
Dude, anytime. You're going to be my go-to guest because you live literally downstairs. Just like, shit, we need a guest. Derek, come up here and talk more about movies.
I'm sorry if my movie talk bored.
Not at all, man. No, first of all, I'm as an entertainer, you know, even as a comedian or an actor, obviously, I love film. I love talking about it. You obviously know a lot more than I do about us. Like you've seen more films that I haven't seen versus more films than I have. So the films that I you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I bow to your superior film knowledge, and I love talking shop, man. And it's interesting talking to somebody on the other side of the camera too.
Yeah. I could talk all night about this.
Yeah, I want to ask you more questions. Tell me something.
Okay, well, you know what? I was just doing. Well, first of all, to quote the podcast, what's for dinner, honey?
Oh, I was going to be making. There's chicken breast defrosting, and then I figured
speed it up. It was a quick question.
Chicken breasts baked in some fashion with broccoli fresh from the farmer's market and potatoes au gratin.
Okay,
how's that sound?
When's that going to be ready?
Within a half an hour after the podcast is over.
Okay.
So, that's where he basically is.
Sorry, I'm fucking hungry. I'm hungry. I'll be honest.
What's it gonna be? We can always fix up something quick.
Okay. Well, did you want to ask Derek something?
Yes, because
this is the only time you've ever met him.
Yeah.
So make sure
you better get it out now because I'm not talking to you again.
I think. I'm going to hold you to that. No, I'm kidding. I think we've talked about this before, but I'd like to have it in front of Flip, more importantly, because I get
no, Allison,
about
I will
this.
Not do that to you.
I do not want to see his Stalin.
Do you feel that sometimes, as a filmmaker, that a choice of appearance of the person can make
absolutely
a distractive difference.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I am totally dogged and always am. I have never been able to sit through what I've been told is a fabulous movie and really concentrate on it because there's an appearance factor that bothers me. Everybody here loves Memento, right?
I like it.
Okay. He loves it, and most people I talk to love it. I could not, for whatever reason, pay attention to the movie because Guy Pearce should have not been blonde, like bleaching blonde in that movie.
You're out of your fucking mind.
I am not. There's something to me that seems like that character, and I just want to say this in front of a movie, because this is my opinion, if I was a movie maker, that I would have dyed his hair if he happened to come on set like that, or I would have just, like, prepared him that I want him to be a... He's been dark in plenty of movies, dark-haired, and he looks sophisticated and believable as that particular character, and that's all I have to say. I'm curious of what you think in the appearance factor, if that's too
distracting. I do believe in appearance factor. It shouldn't be that way. I don't, you know, I think that in a perfect world, it shouldn't matter what they look like, you know. But no, I've actually, you know, cast and not cast people based on appearance. I think has to be a... But you're talking about like that sort of choice of...
Well,
that's just one of the movies I've become distracted on because some choice was made either in And it didn't just have to be like the appearance. It could have been the lighting or the music or something turned me off completely to being able to be involved in the movie and really like believe the movie. And that was one of these big things. And I'm probably going to be panned for this and I don't care.
No. I honestly think that I wish they wouldn't have done that because I don't think it benefited the movie at all.
I think
it didn't bother me, but I mean, I could see.
I think when it comes down to it, it's all opinion, you know. Like, but I don't know how you can personally, my opinion, how you can ignore or hate such a movie that is so original.
Didn't say I hated it.
And it was so it was executed to me, I think, almost flawlessly.
I couldn't pay attention
because of fucking hair.
Honestly, because of the hair, because I did not believe the person. With the way that he looked, would be having this experience. So,
but the way that he looked, it's
there was something. Okay, so okay, somebody who has lost his memory and has been like searching for like the answers to his life, and I think somehow like maybe
it can't be a blonde guy.
The hair wasn't natural.
Blonde people never have trouble.
Derek has naturally like sandy, like dark blonde hair. Like it's almost light brown, dark blonde. You were a blonde kid, weren't you? When you were a baby, yeah. I was a blonde baby too. We're like light brown now, but we're still light. That looks natural. He doesn't have he doesn't have Thor blonde extensions. You know, like it weird.
I'm editing this whole part out of the podcast.
Well, fine. I was just talking about my movie opinions with our director friend.
I know, but yours are stupid.
Very much. For one day, I will watch it and I will like totally draw brown hair with my eyes.
Okay, if Guy Pearce and Christopher Nolan are listening to this, can you please redo Memento with a Criterion Collection?
Just go back and just bastardize the hell out of it. Turn it in 3D. Change his hair color. Add Jabba the Hutt. And
oh, that'd be great.
Mutua memory, Skywalker.
Solo.
Memento. Han, well, you better. Cool. Han, Memento.
Any other questions?
let me think. That was one of my main ones because he makes me think I'm crazy. But
you aren't crazy.
I'm really into movie making where if in the first 10 minutes the character development hasn't been made, I don't care about these people in the first 15 minutes for most movies. I mean, I know all movies don't have that kind of structure, but if you haven't grabbed me in those first 15 minutes with something, then it's just a waste of a movie for me.
Well, what is your honest opinion of Come Morning?
Honestly, you immediately grabbed me with everybody's personalities. So I immediately had people that I was invested in the first 15 minutes.
And although I think the grandfather should have been blonde.
Bleach blonde.
Bleach blonde grandpa.
I mean, and we've discussed I just was not, and I don't want to give away anything in the movie, but there was one character who I wasn't aware of her complete and total identity right out the gate, but that was sort of initially vaguely put there, I believe, by you, so that it would be something to kind of sit with and question.
Yeah, that was one. That was when we first saw the movie too. We were like, "Wait, what is going on with this character?" And then you explained, and I'm pretty sure you know who we're talking about.
Yeah,
in the film.
Yeah. I think it's the only her in the film.
It's true.
Technically, is the only her in the film.
That is the only her. Yeah, you're very subtle in that. I got a problem with her. But from what you were telling us, that's something that's kind of supposed to be more hinted at than directly.
Yeah. And that was a choice. It's one of those things that if you never get it, then it's fine.
Yeah.
If you do get it, even better.
That's the thing.
But,
like,
but it doesn't hinge. You know, when the story doesn't hinge.
Yeah. When we're watching it, it's like, you know, you're trying to figure out what the relationship is with this character, with the rest of the characters in the film. And it's never, even without you telling us the actual meaning of the character, it was still hinted about enough that she was obviously somebody close to the other characters. Mm-hmm. You might not know specifically how, but it's implied enough that you realize she's somebody who, again, is close to the characters. So I don't think it's a hindrance. It's just an extra little bonus going, oh, when you realize.
Well, I think that.
Did you explain to that actress what her part
was?
Yeah.
Okay. In fact, she was one of the first people cast in the movie. She was the very first audition I got.
Really?
Yeah. The first video audition I got. And I immediately saw it and said, that's her. I bet I saw 50 or 60 more women for the role. And I said, nope, that was her.
Well, so she set the bar.
Wow.
I don't know why that was funny.
Yeah, I don't either.
Was she an alcoholic? Is that why she set the bar? Funny you should say that.
Or she was training to be a lawyer or something.
She set... Yeah, it really wasn't funny. I don't know why.
I was that little nervous. Yeah.
She's at the bar. Honestly, I didn't. The reason I laughed because I thought you were like bar, like gluck gluck, not bar, like set the bar. I'm like, okay, I guess that's funny.
That wasn't.
Yeah.
No, I was. Wow. Even when I'm not trying to be funny, I'm funny.
I misunderstood.
I've reached the next level. I have the glow.
You've set the bar.
It's a callback.
But no, I like that sort of deal, like where you're not given all the answers. I like that in movies. I feel like a lot of times now, everything is so spelled out in movies.
You don't use your own imagination.
Yeah, it's like the and especially with studio films, it seems like they feel like they have to spell everything out because they think the audience is stupid. And I would rather go into a stupid audience and show them an intelligent movie than bring an audience in and have intelligent people there and show them, you know, give them this stupid walkthrough. Like, I can't stand that. I would rather have people wonder, I don't really understand that. Maybe I should watch it again, or I'm going to have to think about that. Something with Come Morning is whenever the credits roll, I don't want people to get up.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those movies, like, whenever the credits start rolling, you just kind of sit there.
Sit there and take in what you've seen.
Yeah.
I remember I felt like that two times that I could remember, seeing a movie in a theater, two times. Actually, three, now that I think about it, where the credits are rolling and I'm still just kind of like, oh my God, what the fuck just happened? And that was The Wrestler, American Beauty, and Magnolia. Those three.
All three very good.
Yeah, very good.
For me, Donnie Darko, I still don't even know. I probably have to watch it a second time.
We haven't.
It's true.
Yeah, I like movies like that, though.
Yeah, no, yep. I do, too. Those are movies that's when I know that I've really been affected by something when I can't yet comprehend what I just experienced.
I feel like now when I watch a movie, a lot of times I know whether I liked it, you know, whether it was a great film or whatnot. But even up to a few years ago, usually whenever I would see a movie, I don't know, probably up until I started teaching film, I taught film for a year at a school in Arkansas. But even at that point and before, when I would see a movie and it was over, and I wasn't really quite sure what to think, usually that movie would become one of my favorites, you know, because it left me thinking about it. Sometimes, you know, a couple of weeks, I would still be like, man, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I really want to watch that again.
Totally.
I think as a filmmaker, that can be the best compliment you have. Like, I really, but it has to be to the point where you can't just be so ambiguous. You can't cheat the audience, you know. You can't just pull a fast one on them in the end and be like, I got you, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
Which... I feel like M. Night Shyamalan's later work was like that. Early on, I felt like his stuff was very smart. And in the end, you're like, oh, wow, okay. Yeah. Later on, it became more like, oh, I gotcha, you know? Mm-hmm. And it felt...
I didn't even see the last couple of movies he did.
It felt like a trick, you know?
Yeah.
I guess M. Night Shyamalan's a bad example. Well, it's not a bad example.
No, I know exactly what you're saying.
But I feel like the audience has to be fulfilled, but still left with this urge to... stay in the world, you know, or go back and revisit it and figure out more about what was there.
Totally.
And I like movies like that have depth and layers to it, where the first time around...
Did you ever see Popeye?
Yes. Talk about layers.
My God. Actually, did you ever see Popeye?
No, I didn't.
Oh, it was really adorable. Sorry.
But
what's your favorite genre of movie? If you could say, like, you have a genre that you... Or what would be, like, the top three genres, like, favorite movies to get into?
Honestly, I really like adventure films. But I don't like very many of them. And I don't think very many of them are made now. Like, true, just straight-up adventure, like Indiana Jones. And even... the mummy, the original mummy,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. I like stuff like that a lot, mm-hmm. but I mean, it's pure popcorn. It's fun. It's enjoyable. I like being taken to this world. Jurassic Park's one of those. You know, it's just mm-hmm. like straight up adventure. It has elements of horror, you know, and drama and a little bit of comedy or whatnot, but
it's essentially an adventure film.
Yeah, and I think Steven Spielberg early on really did that, you know, really well.
Well, I mean, he pretty much invented the summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
Like, was it Jaws?
Jaws, yeah.
Yeah. Like, but that...
Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade.
Not the Temple of Doom, just skip right over that
no,
one.
No, I actually did like the Temple of Doom. I watched it a lot growing up.
Kalima! Kalima! That scared the shit out of me. I saw that in the theater as a kid.
But I think, well, and even Star Wars, you mm-hmm. know, it's just these worlds they take you to, and a lot of times, you know, the soundtrack and the setting, it's like just, you know, like I can go to Universal and stand outside the Jurassic Park ride here. Dun, 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 and I was like, oh my God, I want to ride, you know? And when you go to Disneyland and you're standing in for the Indiana Jones ride and you hear that, dun, 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 you know, like the mystery theme. Yeah. But it's just, I really like that genre, but I don't think it's done very often. It's not done very well most of the time. And now, most especially, it just relies so much on computer-generated stuff. And I think that almost immediately takes me out of the film. Yeah. I think one of the best executions of that was in Lord of the Rings, where they blended special effects, like CG, in miniatures, you know, and they even use matte paintings and things like that. Like older technologies to do this. It wasn't, they didn't just rely on CG, which is what a lot of things do now, you know.
Did you see Green Lantern?
No.
It's pretty much all CG.
Yeah.
And it's like, people were shitting on it for that. And I hadn't seen it yet. And I was a Green Lantern fan too. And then I saw it. I'm like, oh yeah, I see what they're saying. This is like, oh, she's pulling out plates.
I saw the Snow White movie. And I did think that they did a fairly good job.
Yeah, we were definitely going to go see that one.
But it's I mean, it does have a lot of special effects in it, but at
it's
the same
blended
time,
well.
Yeah, they did a good job, I think. I'd like to see more things like that.
Well, I think they're going to be doing Rumpelstiltskin the Epic, taking all the Grimm's fairy tales. Yeah. Cinderella, she's back and pissed off.
Are you serious?
No, I was pulling.
Well, yeah, but I think that'd actually be
Rumpelstiltskin?
Maybe. Come on. They've had a horror
well,
film.
They did that with Shrek. Rumpelstiltskin was the antagonist
in that. Yeah, one of those.
In the last one.
I do like the Shrek movies.
I do, too.
I think they're great.
I do, too. The third one was a little, but I like the first, second, and the last one.
I don't know if I saw the fourth one.
That was the one with the...
One, two, three. That's the Rumpelstiltskin
one? Yeah.
Okay, then I saw it.
Though the third one was one with Prince... The What was it?
Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, King Arthur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I like the Shrek movies. They're fun.
Well, we'll have to watch Shrek sometime.
Is it dinner time?
Yes, I think what's for dinner is about to eat dinner. But again, want to thank Derek Sims for stopping by the couch.
And thanks, Flippy. Flippy.
Flippy.
I was gonna say,
the mic's not on, honey.
I was gonna say thanks, Flip, and then I was gonna do a yell to Skippy out there, you know, where he disappeared to. But I just called you.
I'm fucking your mother.
Thanks, Skippy.
He was talking to me, which is really weird. but Derek, where can people find you?
Fabled Motion Pictures is my production company.
FabledMotionPictures.com?
.com. Yeah, Fabled. Excellent. With a D. You can type in Come Morning onto Facebook, and you can get links from there to
Excellent.
Everything.
It's a C-O-M. Is it Morning or Morning?
Morning.
Morning with a G.
Spelled properly.
Excellent. And you're on Facebook and all that
stuff?
I am,
yeah. And so is Fable Motion Pictures and my wife's new movie. We just created a Facebook page for it. It's still a year out from being in production.
Well, what's it called?
It's called The Long Road.
The Long Road. Excellent.
And it's going to be another Southern character piece. Very, very slow, very character-driven, very Terrence Malickian.
Very Terrence Malickian. Well, it's very cool. I look forward to seeing that one, too, man.
Cool.
And as always, guys, you could check me out Facebook.com/Flip Schultz, Twitter at Flip Schultz, flipisfunny.com, also What's For Dinner Podcast.com. You can get my my CDs on iTunes, Amazon. I give you guys this plug every week. I apologize. Sorry. There's another dollar. AOL. She says every time you apologize on the podcast, you got to give her a quarter. Apparently, I do that a lot. But I'm sorry. I'm always looking out for other people and apologizing. It's a very bad habit. But anyway, guys, thank you again for and also to you guys that again have been subscribing and listening since the beginning. I really do appreciate the support, and I get some nice emails. And if you guys want to leave some nice comments on iTunes, you know I would love that. And again, this is number 16. Jesus, could you wait 2 seconds? Sorry, I'm just kidding. Sorry, she's in the kitchen, which is literally right next to me right now, with the pans and the pots getting the dinner ready. That's what's for dinner. But you can always check my schedule for tour dates. And, of course, Allison has her website, dirtyguitargirl.com. You can get her on Facebook and Twitter as well, at Allison Comedy. You guys, again, thank you so much. I will see you next week. Keep it real. Keep it fun. Keep it really fun. And enjoy your dinner. Bye-bye.